10 o'clock.
Yeah, it didn't come up the way I wanted.
I'll go ahead and call us to order. It's 10 o'clock, and this is our regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for April 23rd, 2013. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible,
Public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Don't see anybody moving to the mic. Consideration of minutes, and I think the only thing we have is from the 9th. Is that correct? We don't have
that. That is correct. Yet. I would move the minutes of 4-9-13.
And I'll second that. Is there any discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
I would move the personnel actions as submitted.
I will second that. Any discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Personnel actions are approved. Consideration of claims.
Another great claims week. Move approval claims of 4-29-13 as submitted.
I will second that. Any discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Claims are approved. A couple of additions and subtractions from the consent agenda. We're going to add utility permit 1354 and 1355. And we're going to remove items 7, 8, and 10 from this week's consent agenda and put them on next week's consent agenda because I am directly related to at least two of those that we're buying some easement from. So I would normally recuse myself from the vote, but since there's only two of us, wouldn't work out very well. So
it makes sense. I would approve the consent agenda with noted changes.
I'll second it. Any additional discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Consent agenda, as noted, is approved. Keeping up, Shelley. No public hearing items. Additional items. Consideration of Resolution 1363, the FY13 Appropriations Amendment. Everybody's favorite assistant auditor, Lisa Markley.
Yeah. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
What I have on the appropriation amendment today is the your request to appropriate the remaining dollars for the elected officials. So that is what is in front of you. There was a, let me see, what shall I call it? I hit the wrong button, so I'm changing it for the auditor from 38,434 to 48,734.
Say it again.
It goes from 38,434 to 38,734. So you, the original one that you had, I just put a new one in today. I would also like to talk to... Oh, go ahead. You have to approve this one before I can continue on with my conversation.
I will move approval of Resolution 1363 for the FY13 Appropriation Amendment as amended.
And I will second it. Any additional discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Resolution 1363 is approved.
And on that same line, just so you're aware, if I have your blessing and you can decide next week when I bring it to you, but I'm going to appropriate the remaining dollars for salaries for the rest of the departments also. And then I'm going to bring to you a budget amendment. The deadline for budget amendments was last Friday. So I'm going to bring that to you next week for discussion, and then we'll publish and actually amend the budget at the end of May. Okay.
And thank you.
And that's pretty standard operating procedure. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
We're down to item 10, agency reports. It looks like Mainstream Living. Bill Vaughn.
Welcome, Bill.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you very much for the opportunity to bring a report to your attention. First, if I can, I'd like to make sure that you guys got invited to Reno Berg's retirement party on the 26th from 2 to 5, and it's at the Gateway. So
I'm aware. I'm scheduled to be at an event in Des Moines, but I'm not sure yet. But.
Okay. Well, we're hoping that you can maybe participate. Rick as well. And thank you very much. Story County and Mainstream work very closely together. I brought a copy of a report for you. Mainstream Living currently serves individuals in two program areas in Story County, the Home and Community-Based Waiver and our Employment and Learning Center. Some individuals may receive more than one type of service, while others may only receive one specific service. The majority of individuals receiving services are funded through Medicaid, with a few receiving their funding from Story County. And Story County has stepped up to provide that service for people who need it, but who, for one reason or another, may not qualify for a given reason. The total number of individuals served in each program are as follows. Home and community-based services, hourly supported community living services, we provide that for 26 individuals. Daily supported community living services, we provide for 53 individuals in 18 sites. And medically fragile services for 5 individuals in 1 site. With the new mental health redesign, I included all people living in Story County, so that might give you some help for as it changes for legal settlement. At the MELC Center, which is our Mainstream Employment and Learning Center, we provide day habilitation services for 76 individuals, and our Snoozland Sensory Center serves 12 individuals. Enclaves, there are 37 individuals in 4 different sites, and we're looking at developing a 5th enclave site, but yet to be determined. Of the numbers above, Story County pays for 2 individuals receiving hourly supported community living services. During fiscal year 11 and 12, we received $1,846. We're on track to receive $18,155 for this fiscal year. The numbers change as people move in and out of the county and as their needs change. Mainstream requested $7,700 for fiscal year 13-14, and we were allocated $4,620. Story County pays for 3 individuals receiving enclave services. During fiscal year 11 and 12, we received $9,403 for those services. We are on track to receive $5,422 this fiscal year. We requested $10,000 for fiscal year 13-14, and were allocated $7,940. Story County pays for 1 individual receiving day habilitation services. During fiscal year 11-12, we received $11,347 for those services. We are on track to receive $362 for this fiscal year. We requested $10,000 for fiscal year 13-14, and were allocated $8,700. And finally, Story County pays for 1 individual receiving daily supported community living services. During fiscal year 11-12, we received $47,182 for these services. We received $14,278 this fiscal year. We requested $32,300 for fiscal year 13-14, and were allocated $20,920. This individual discontinued services on February 5th. Any questions? Or?
And do each of these all go through the asset process?
Yes, they
all
do.
Of these? That's what I thought.
Yes, okay. They do.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Matt, thank you. Let me ask this question, Bill. Are you the new Reno, or who is the new Reno?
Well, I'm 2 weeks the new Reno, so
congratulations.
Reno is still Reno.
Okay.
For another 2 weeks. So right now there are 2 president CEOs of Mainstream Living. So
okay.
But if you call, you'll get me.
Where's the bigger office?
It's Reno's office, but it doesn't have that big fish anymore.
I see. So. Well, I kind of heard that, but I noticed it wasn't announced at least publicly here. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us a little bit about the change of the guards.
Well, thank you very much. I've been with Mainstream for 33 years, and I've been Reno's right hand for many, many years. And the last 4, I was the first vice president under him in a transition, so we tried to do that from inside.
Yeah, Amber Guerrieri was at Rotary, and she had mentioned that to me, and I said, well, wait till I get a chance to see him. I'll give him a hard time.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you. Congratulations.
Next is Veterans Affairs Agency Report. Brett McLean, our director, VA director.
Good morning.
Good morning.
reporting on the third quarter today. For county benefits, and to kind of reflect back on the first quarter of this year, we spent $1,827. The second quarter, $6,277. So now the third quarter was lower than each of those. It was $1,170.44. Basically, that's rent for three veterans. This year, we had a homeless stand down, our first one ever. Kind of came about when I met a veteran in the office, and we needed to get together to do some more paperwork. He wanted me to go to his place, and his place was a tent in the city of Ames, so I went there, and I found some other tent campers, and so we decided maybe we should do an outreach program to reach out to veterans and actually non-veterans who are homeless or close to being homeless. So we did. We hosted the first supportive initiative on March 15th from 9 to 3 at the First Methodist Church. So first time we ever done this was just kind of a pilot program. The program was for the homeless and close to being homeless. We had 45 volunteers from 11 different agencies, served breakfast and lunch, and we offered things like, we had transportation, so we could go to the homeless shelter or motel or the campsite and transport them up, transport them down to the Legion for showers. We had haircuts, clothing, dental, medical, VA benefits, general assistance benefits, legal aid, mental health services, and to give them something to do and the satisfaction of working for things, we gave them prizes after we played bingo. So we had a couple sessions of that, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Surprisingly, we had a lot of kids here. We had men and women and families that came in. We had some plainclothes police officers were at the door. I think we had four or five of them just to check bags, make sure nothing came into the church that we didn't want to deal with. And then they came on in and signed in and just kind of went through to figuring out what they wanted to do that day, and we got them taken care of. So I think we're looking at doing another one of these. We had food for 200. So on state and federal benefits during the last quarter, we assisted 231 veterans in filing for state or federal benefits. 40 of them we did original claims, which means we developed those claims and we sent those to the VA regional office to start the process of about 237 days before we're going to know an answer on those claims. 7 claims we were able to reopen for increased benefits due to the diagnoses being much worse now than it was when they were granted for those service connections. And some of these went back 20 and 30 years. So I urge veterans, if you have a claim that you've been service connected for 20 years or more, and you feel like it's much worse now than it was then, to reopen. It can either go up or stay the same. It can't go down after 20 years. Anything under 20 years, it could go down, stay the same, or go up. So there's a little bit of a risk there. We've seen 31 veterans that were from the World War II war, 24 veterans that were for Korea, 98 veterans from the Vietnam War, 12 veterans from Persian Gulf War, 12 veterans from the Cold War, or peacetime, 43 from OIF, OEF, and OND, and that's Operation Iraqi Freedom. So these are folks that served in Iraq from March 20th, 2003, to August 30th, 2010. Operation Enduring Freedom, which is Afghanistan, from October 7th, 2001, to present. And Operation New Dawn is kind of a new one. This is anybody that served in Iraq after August 31st, 2010. 42 veterans were enrolled in VA healthcare system, and 35 came in for a new driver's license with the word veteran on it. This is a new program where the veterans can go to anybody in Iowa, go to their county veteran service officer, and basically our agreement with the DOT is we verify their character of service. And so right now it's only for when you're renewing your driver's license. You can come by our office. We have the forms. We'll help you fill them out, take them over to the DOT, and you get a new license for free with the word veteran on that driver's license. There is a bill that's currently pending at the Capitol that may allow veterans to pay $10, and then they could do this at any time. They don't have to wait till the expiration. And, of course, on expiration, it could be 30 days before the actual date on your license you can renew. Normally, I report on the geographic distribution of VA expenditures at this meeting. However, that report won't be out till the end of the week, so I'll have to do that at the next meeting. But that report it basically is a breakdown of benefits paid to veterans and surviving spouses and dependents by county. So last year, this report will actually be for 2012, but the latest one that I've got for 2011, we received $16,349,000 here in Story County. Now, that's nothing that the board got to see, touch, or feel. It went right to the veterans and surviving spouses and dependents, and we just hope that they spend their money in Story County. State VA spring training and updates. Spring school for the commissioners was held April 9th in Des Moines. All three of our commissioners were in attendance. Harlan Borton, Jennifer Rabine, and Chad Cook. I'm just waiting on their certificates, and when I get those, I'll forward those to the HR department for their training record. And also, on April 9th, 10th, and 11th, Luke Jensen and myself were both in attendance for our requalification with the state. Kind of a surprising thing that happened to me. March 1st, I received a letter from the governor's office that Governor Branstad had appointed me to sit on the Mental Health and Disabilities Service Commission. That appointment will be effective May 1st. And it's a 3-year term, and I thank the board for your support, allowing me to sit on that board for that position. I don't know too much about it yet, besides they meet once a month from about 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, it looks like, by looking at their minutes.
Well, really enjoy meeting with the group. I've attended a couple of their meetings this spring, and you're going to have some big shoes to fill because your veteran counterpart that have been on that is contributes quite a bit and really speaks out for the initiatives that will impact veterans in the state, and I'm sure you will continue to do a good job as well. So
I'll
have you part of that group.
I'll try my best on that. Yeah, thank you. Also, had the opportunity to get around and talk about this a little bit. Well, we are going to do a Freedom Flight for 2013. Process is underway. We currently have enough signed up to fill the airplane. We just don't have enough funds to fill the bank account yet. So the flight's going to be for World War II, Korea, and Vietnam veterans who served in Story County or who lived in Story County prior to going in the military. We still have openings for World War II and Korea veterans, so we're urging them to take this trip if they're able. We will be going Tuesday, October the 1st, 2013, around 4 a.m. is when we'll be leaving Iowa State University and return that day around midnight for a one-day trip. And our website talks about some events that we have, fundraisers we have coming up. If anybody would like to take a look at that, and that's StoryCountyFreedomFlight.org. So our urgency to do this is really high because our veterans are getting older, and we've actually buried four veterans that went on the last October flight. So we're really wanting to get some of our elderly veterans on this trip and get them out there to see their memorials.
Don't they generally say that we lose around 1,000 World War II vets a day?
A day, yeah. 1,400 a day for all veterans, but for World War II, 1,000. And so, you know, it's amazing how many, you know, in the World War II veterans, since we took one flight. Now, whether these veterans were just waiting to see if we could really pull this off or not, I'm not quite sure, but almost immediately after we got back, we had 26 World War II veterans that came in and signed up. And now we have about 30. So we're hoping that we can get all the World War II veterans that want to go, that can go, and Korea, and then we'll backfill with the Vietnam veterans, but so we can move forward. So at some point we could do a flight, you know, have those two groups done where we could do a flight with Vietnam veterans. So
help more people get a chance to see the video that you showed. I know George and I yesterday really was moved and touched by, you know, the reaction of the group. It was a very special moment that you were able to share to those that see how it impacted the lives of the veterans that attended that. And I'm hopeful that more people in our community in the county will get an opportunity to see that video between now and the next flight that you embark on, because it was a very special opportunity.
Well, after the Rotary meeting yesterday, I took that video up to Channel 12, to City Hall, and I gave it to them. I heard they were looking for some things that they could show up there, so maybe we can run that on Channel 12. I know on 28th of May, we have an opportunity to be on the Molly Cooney Show, Channel 8, and we did that last year, maybe that'll help to get the word out too. Some things for legislation that just kind of has to do with veterans and maybe with the county here. House File 453 relates to veterans' preference in certain appointments made by the counties and cities. And this is actually an update as of this morning, or as of yesterday. That passed in the House 100-0, placed on unfinished business calendar currently. Senate File 224 will allow replacement of the driver's license for the $10 fee. Veterans will be able to have veterans designation placed on the license at any time by paying the replacement fee. And that passed in the Senate 37-11, amended and passed in the House 99-0. Senate concurred and passed 38-12. House File 506 relates to property tax. Going back to 1947, there was the average value of a home in Iowa was $18,520. So they took 10% of that and gave the veterans $1,852 off the current value of their property. It hasn't changed. However, taxes have gone up a little bit. So that bill is for future, and it's under the future and uncertain of those bills, but they're looking at maybe doing something a little bit different there with that. And House File 221/Senate File 303 exempts federal retired pay for residents receiving military service pay for state individual income tax, and including retroactive. And currently, that is in the means. It passed the Senate. VA referred to Senate in Ways and Means. And a fiscal note is it would mean $10.7 million by 2017. So, not sure on that one. And then House File 596 is County Commission of Veterans Affairs. There's going to be some changes in the 35B. It passed the House VA and placed on the calendar, referred back to the House VA. So they've got some work to do on that one yet. And that concludes my report, Board. Do you have any questions for me?
No, just thank you again. And as I emailed you back yesterday, just was so impressed with your report to the Rotary Club yesterday. And I know that you and Renee and all of your volunteers and committee will be very successful as you prepare for your October flight. This is something that I think the community will certainly get behind and embrace, and I know you guys will put in a lot of time and effort, but it's a tremendous reward for and an honor for our veterans who have served. So I want to thank you again publicly for your effort, and Renee, who is co-chairing that for Story
yep.
County.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is George Blitzos from YSS.
Good morning, supervisors. Good morning. We are here for our quarterly report, and if I could begin by welcoming the newest CEO at Mainstream Living, Bill, to the realm of executive directors of nonprofits in Story County. This is the best county to be a nonprofit director for, primarily because of the generosity of our local governments, and in particular the Board of Supervisors, and the whole asset process is unique in the state and works very well at ensuring that the people of this county get high-quality service when they are down and out, and to help them get back on their feet and to have safe places to live, and for the kids that we serve, not only safe places to live, but a better future. The last quarter has been very busy for YSS. We have a lot to report to you, but I wanted to start with introduction. We've had several changes in our management team that I've been telling you about the last few quarters. We have a new CFO, Mindy Stensland. We have a new quality assurance coordinator, Belinda Meese, and she was formerly the residential director at Beloit Lutheran Social Services. And we also have a new grant writer development person sitting next to me, Ann, who I think you know as well. And I'm going to have Ann introduce herself to you, give her background, and tell you what she's going to be doing at YSS.
Good morning.
Morning.
Familiar faces, which is kind of nice. as George says, I am the new grant writer with Youth and Children's Services and been there just over a month now. I have primarily experience in the public health arena in Missouri and in Iowa, and you're going to know me from my work with the Story County Empowerment and DCAT projects until they went through some organizational changes last year, and now there's new staff in those positions. So very happy to be with Youth and Shelter Services and be back doing grant writing, which is what I did a few jobs ago. So
are you familiar at all with the Regional Health Equity Council that Iowa is a part of, along with several of our bordering states? And they're primarily looking at ways to impact the lives of the minority population. And I know a lot of the families that we serve youth-wise are involved in programs. And we have regularly scheduled quarterly meetings, and several of them are done via conference call type of setup. And we have one annual meeting in St. Louis, usually in the fall of the year. And I know currently right now we have five representatives from the state of Iowa, and so sometimes when there's openings or things like this, we're always asked to see if there are other agencies that we need to give some information to. And now that I think about that, I've got some fans, nice fans back there that has some information about this, and I need to get some of these over to you that you might want to hand out to some of the families that you guys serve and so forth. But I'll try to keep you all posted on some of the meetings that we're having and discussions, and if you want to sometimes just listen in and see if you have some interest or have some things that you would want to share with this group, I think would be very helpful, because there is federal funding available, particularly for this particular population that they're trying to serve. So I'll try to make a note to pass that information on to you.
Okay. Thank you for that suggestion. We always look to collaborate with others to try to get as much state, federal, and foundation funding into Story County to serve our local citizens. Do you want me to stop over after the meeting and get the fans, or?
Okay. And I still know where I put them in my office. So if not, I'll go find them right there.
Right. We are very grateful for the funding that was approved for next year through the asset process. As you know, the bulk of our county money comes through juvenile court, and it's made a part of their budget. However, we still need to go through the asset process for that. It is county funding. It is local county dollars. And we did get a 3% increase, which we are very grateful for. Last year we had no increase, so this year we especially are grateful, because this is a very tough time for nonprofits. I think the contract is probably in your hands from juvenile court, so if you have any questions about it, just let me know. April was National Volunteer Month, and I just wanted to take a step back and tell you how important volunteers are to Youth and Shelter Services. In the last year, the last 12 months, we have had over 1,000 active volunteers. At the current moment, we have just over 600 volunteers. We have three volunteers to every full-time staff member. YSS started as a volunteer organization. We opened Iowa's first runaway and homeless youth shelter, Rosedale Shelter, which was all run by volunteers, mostly from Iowa State. That led to shelters being opened all across the state, mostly as an alternative to jail and detention, but also as a refuge for kids who were abused, battered, or had run away from home. Nine times out of ten because of severe family problems. We are going to be celebrating next month Shelter Day that was established by our former First Lady, Mary Culver. And Jane is handing out an invitation to come to our shelter. We'd really like the Board of Supervisors to be there. Mary Culver will be one of our special guests and speakers for the day. Our program is Rescuing Youth and Reuniting Families. And I'm very proud to report to you that we have just reached the mark of 7,500 different youth who have lived at the shelter since we opened it. 7,500 young people. So this is on May 8th, and it's open to the whole community. We will have a tent out in the yard and parking at Fairway, 4:30 to 6. We will have a really good program, including Mary Culver, as I said, but also several of our former youth who are now contributing members of society will be talking about their stay and benefits from Rosedale Shelter. This county can be very proud of the fact that it started Iowa's first emergency youth shelter. At one point in Iowa, we got up to 28 emergency use shelters. We're now down to 14. The funding has been cut by the legislature the last 2 years. The adding those 2 years of cuts together, it's over just over $1.4 million. The governor had in his budget another $400,000 cut. However, the appropriations bill that just came out from the Senate side is restoring $400,000 that was taken out last year. So the House hasn't come out with its Health and Human Services appropriations bill. We're hoping that they will just look at the Senate's.
Yes. Not likely, but a compromise is probably what we can hope for. What I'm hearing in all the appropriations that are coming down, that more than likely conference committees are going to make the final determinations between the Senate and the House proposals. And our best guess is we're hoping that there will be an increase rather than a decrease.
Yes.
I think we have a chance of getting some things, but not likely that they're going to accept one or the other. This just doesn't seem to be the climate of cooperation that we'd like to see when we look at some of our most vulnerable population and the needs that are still out there.
I just don't understand why there is this push to cut the number of shelters. I mean, this is the primary safety net we have for kids in this state. And to have half the number of beds that we had a few years ago is really a travesty. Now, what the consequences are for our local shelter are as follows. We used to have 4 shelters in central Iowa, and we're now down to we used to have 5 shelters in central Iowa, and you include Indianola, Newton, 2 shelters in Des Moines, and then our shelter as well, and we're down to 2. The Indianola shelter has closed due to funding cuts, the Newton shelter closed, and one of the 2 shelters in Des Moines. The consequence for us is that we're seeing kids from all over. And as I hand out this statistical report for the last quarter, we're up in almost all areas of service except our shelter. And because all we count on this report, of course, are Story County residents or runaways who are picked up in Story County, because we serve them too with the Story County funds, as we hope other runaways will be served in other jurisdictions by the local community. So anyway, the numbers are down, especially for this last quarter for shelter, and the number of beds for the Story County kids are down, or the number of days are down to just over 10. Used to be we had kids up to 30 days, and it's just been shorter and shorter turnover. We're doing a lot more service in the home and to divert kids from coming to the shelter locally through mediation, but we're full. And when Story County needs a bed, sometimes they have to seek, they go to detention, which is not what we want, or they look for an open bed somewhere else in the state. So I regret this. We've had several meetings in the last quarter with juvenile court to talk about how we can always keep at least one bed open for Story County, and we do have some new practices where we're trying to do that to ensure that there is always a bed for juvenile court. How the shelter, as I said, got started all those years ago with volunteer help. The first funder for the first shelter in Iowa, the first local government funding, came from the Board of Supervisors. And that was when we didn't have a license, because no license existed. We were the only service. There was no DHS funding. There was nothing. And it was the local judge who said, we need to have this, and he basically ordered the Board of Supervisors to fund us for $5,000, That's why the money has always come through juvenile court. It's a tradition rather than, and it's, of course, grown over the years, and we're very grateful for it. A little bit of history there. Now I'm going to turn, I'll hand this and a few other things out while Jane presents a report on our very busy community youth development program.
Well, good morning. My name is Jane Larkin, and I'm the Community Prevention Coordinator with Youth and Shelter Services. And this has been a very busy month. During quarter three, we spent a lot of time planning for our Teen Maze event, which was April 1 through 5 over at the Boone County Fairgrounds, and that brought 7th graders from three counties together from Story, Boone, and Greene County to do a experiential learning event. They spent 2 hours in the maze. There were 12 booths to go through, and there were four different tracks. So students were able to learn some more information about mental health issues, health and wellness, jobs and financial literacy, as well as relationships. We have seen 989 students from that Teen Maze event. We also had over 100 professional volunteers that came during the week to help volunteer during that event, and they volunteered for almost 580 hours that week. We also had almost 150 Qantas volunteers and 84 YSS staff. So George has talked about the importance of volunteer with YSS. This is an example of an event that we held in partnership with the Qantas of District 7, where the volunteers are very important for the events that we do, for the activities that we do. The neat thing about Teen Maze is that the activities that are covered in that, a lot of the students have been through our programs at schools. With 7th graders in Story and Boone County, they've gone through Project Alert, which is our science-based substance abuse programming. And we review some of the lessons that they've learned in those lessons. And so it's a great opportunity for the students to be able to have some hands-on experience and some examples of how they may experience some of the things that they've learned in class. So it was a great event. To continue with our science-based curriculums, we will see over 3,000 students in Story County in our elementary and our middle school science-based programs. And that those programs are listed in our handout. We have our Talking About Touching program, which is kindergarten through second grade, our Too Good for Drugs, which is third through fourth grade, and in Nevada, we do that up through sixth grade. And then our Project Alert is our middle school programming, and that's a two-year curriculum. So 3,000 students that support from this board has been very appreciative, or we are very appreciative of the support that you've given us to be able to provide those lessons with the students. Other things that we've done during quarter three is that we had a day on the Hill, the Youth Speak Out Day on the Hill, which is on February 25th, and we had 12 Story County youth that took part in that day. They were involved with some youth training to hear information about the impact that underage drinking can have on a young person, on their brain development, and then also how to speak to their legislators about things that they're actually seeing in their community in regards to underage drinking. We also did some training with the youth on medicinal marijuana. That was still a topic that was kind of hot in the legislation or in the legislature at that time. And so we had some conversations with the students and asked, what do they think about that? Where do they stand? What type of information would they like to share with their legislators about that if they have the opportunity? They did an outstanding job speaking with legislators, sharing with them what they're seeing in their home community, and sharing what types of things that they would see would be beneficial for them to be successful in the future. So we have Youth and Shelter Services staff who were part of the teen training in the morning, as well as part of the press conference in the afternoon where legislators were invited to. So that was a great success. And there were over 100 youth from around the state of Iowa who participated in that day on the Hill. We also had a youth training just prior to that in January where we brought youth together and we had some information about new and emerging tobacco products and ways that, or some activities that they could do to help educate their peers about the impact that tobacco has on people. a lot of, when we go out and we speak to different groups on tobacco issues, they think that the work is done because of the Smoke-Free Air Act. So we're doing a lot of education that the products are still out there, they can still be harmful, and here are some things that we can do as a community to help better take care of ourselves. And with the new and emerging tobacco products that are out there, I think it's very important to be educated, to be informed about the things that are coming up and that are available in our community. Laura Bell, who is our tobacco control specialist, has been going to different school districts around Story County to educate the educators about what to look for, what the new products are. And then we had our youth leaders from the SAD groups, the Students Against Destructive Decisions, so that they're informed now of what to look for as well, to work cohesively now with the school administration. So they're doing a great job. And we also have our youth employment specialist who has been working. That is a position that it's only a part-time position, but we've been working with the different schools on soft skills recently. We've had a lot of contacts from schools who have contacted us to say we would like some help to reinforce some soft skills that we've been teaching in some of our classes at the high school level. So our youth employment specialist then has gone in to do some soft skills training as well as interview skills, as well as where to look for a job in Story County. And as we know, jobs are a little difficult to find in Story County, especially for youth. So we really look at volunteer opportunities and service work that the students can do in the county. And with that, we have our Be the Change camps that are coming up this summer. Our first is June 24th through the 28th here in Nevada. And July 15th through 19th, we have our week-long camp in Ames. And these camps are focused on volunteer opportunities as well as workshops that students will be involved in that focus on those soft skills, what to do during an interview, and also some financial literacy, looking at maybe the price differences between stores, looking at coupons, that sort of information. So, and then the students will have an opportunity then to actually speak with the employer who employs people of their age and to ask them questions about what do they look for in an employee? You know, what can we do to increase our odds down the road about getting a job? And then we look at within their home community, where are some places that they could volunteer and gain some of those skills? So,
Dan, this probably is not just recently one of the thoughts that came to my mind, and I don't know whether when you talk to students about their image and their presence and how they go about conducting themselves, do you ever get down to even talking about the negative side of tattooing and body piercing and all these types of things? When I look at some of our adults, young adults, and you know, and I'm sure in some of the homes that these young kids are probably using them as role models, but I see that when they have the permanent tattoos all over their bodies, that I really think that in some cases this is a detriment to seeking employment in some circles as they get a little bit older. And I know it's a sensitive type of topic, but I just wonder if somehow have you all thought about you know, how you get them to brainstorm. I know a lot of times you all do round table brainstorming type of thing, but throwing out, well, you know, looking at tattoos and so forth and things like this, whether or not this would be something that will just maybe might make a difference in terms of how kids perceive that. Just something to think about.
We actually do that with our Be the Change camps with the employers that we work with that come in and speak with the students. We kind of prime them with some things to talk with the students about, and we have some great relationship with some Fairway managers, and they'll talk about that. If they see a tattoo, then the interview's over. And so they really make it very clear that in the professional setting, how you look, how you present yourself is very important. So we do cover that.
Thank you.
Yes.
And body piercing is also a big fad, and it is among our young people. And we also describe to them that if they want to work at McDonald's, they have to remove the body piercing and actually cover it, either with a Band-Aid or anything to cover it. They can't work. That's their rules there.
Yeah.
A few things to add to Jane's report and the day on the Hill and the youth presenting. We had First Lady there as well, and she endorsed the things that the kids were speaking about. But the main bill that the youth were supporting for the third year in a row is the social host bill. And it made it through the first funnel and failed to make it through the second funnel. So 3 years in a row. And we are very disappointed in that. And we are, the Prevention Policy Board in Story County is planning to come before the Board of Supervisors next fall and propose that we have a local ordinance. Boone has a local ordinance. Marshall County has a countywide ordinance. It should be countywide. And our former sheriff or chief of police here in Nevada now is the chief over in Marshall County, and we have a center in Marshall County. And at our last board meeting, he reported that they just enforced that ordinance locally for the first time the night or a couple of nights before our meeting, our board meeting there, and he said that they had a complaint. They went to a home, and it was filled with high school kids, and the parents were home. They knew about the drinking. They knocked on the door, and the parent refused to let the police in. They returned with a court order. They all were still there. They still would not open the door. They broke the door down and arrested over 20 kids and the parents. And I asked, okay, under your ordinance in Marshall County, what is the cost for the parent? The cost under the bill that is before the legislature is $500. They wrote their ordinance in Marshall County to cover the expense of the police department. So by having them come back, break down the door, process all of these kids, they have thousands and thousands of dollars in fines. So I hope it is something that you will consider when we come back. You might remember a few years ago we approached the board about the beer keg registration, and we were going county by county, and that led to a statewide law. And it's been very helpful to law enforcement to have that. So we will be back. Is there anything you want to add to that, Jane?
One of the benefits, there's a lot of local communities, counties, and cities who are passing social host ordinances. And so that holds the person who is holding the party responsible, so that law enforcement has an opportunity then to take some action. And so they have found it very helpful. But again, we would want to work with our local law enforcement to gather some more feedback from them about the best how to word this before when we come back. So
we'd like it to be countywide.
Again, it's illegal to provide alcohol to minors under their legal age anyway. So is this an enforcement mechanism that gives the law enforcement additional enforcement authority?
Yes.
Why is that so? I mean, that to me seems strange, that if you have a law that is on the books and you are given suspicion that there's underage drinking taking place at a facility. Now, in this case, the fact that they wouldn't let them in, I can see how you're still going to have a court order, but wouldn't you have to have a court order anyway, even with the ordinance?
When you have a complaint filed, the police can have to ask permission,
right,
but they can inspect, and most of the time when they arrive at the door, they don't want to let them in.
Right.
And so, yeah, they would have to get a court order whether we have the social host ordinance or not. However, it is a more effective enforcement, and it's pretty punitive to have these fines. Also, the other part of the bill, you know, right now when you police enter a premises and the youth are drinking, they all throw their glasses down or, you know, flush the pot down the stool or whatever. Now, under this bill, the social host bill, possession isn't just having it on you or in your hand. You can be charged with possession if they do a breathalyzer test and you fail it. That also is an aspect of this law. Am I right about that?
I think it would have to be written in there like that, but some of the ordinances are written like that.
Yeah. And I think that's what this, the social host statewide bill is also written that way. That would be also more effective. The other thing that I wanted to follow up on while Jane is still here is our Risky Business Conference is next Tuesday. And we do have a breakfast before the conference next Tuesday, April 30, and we'd really like to have the Board of Supervisors come. We'll be giving out the Youth Statewide Youth Leadership Award and also the Statewide Youth or the Statewide Life Award. And we'll be introducing you to the two keynote speakers, and I'll let Jane tell you real quick, try to entice you to listen to the keynote speakers in the morning. You'd be invited as our guests to tell you what the topic is.
This year, we had such a great response from last year's keynote speakers that we had asked them to come back, and they're going to do the youth keynote and the adult keynote together. So they're going to show how social media, how to really work with youth and adults together, and how to utilize that with all aspects of when we work with youth. So Scott McLeod and Alec Kuros will both be back to be able to lead our keynote speaker speech for the day. So we're very excited to have them back. So, and then there's many other opportunities then for breakout sessions with different topics throughout the day too. So we have a wealth of information that will be presented throughout the day and the opportunity for adults and youth to be able to sit down and have conversations together throughout the entire day. So we're very excited.
I hope you can come on Tuesday. Also, I'm going to have Jane show you this. These are photos from Teen Maze. Think of this, almost 1,000 seventh graders from every school district except for one in a three-county area.
Two-county
area?
No. Nope.
Oh.
All
there were
the two schools.
Oh, okay. Three counties. So almost 1,000 kids. And you see them very exceptional educational experience took place for a whole week, and it's all developmentally matched to seventh grade youth. And we have just terrific feedback from the teachers, from the administrators, and from the youth themselves. And we'll be sharing with you those evaluations at our next quarterly meeting. The last item I wanted to talk about is also we will be approaching the Board of Supervisors and ASSET and the City of Ames with a request to consider initiating and funding a youth master plan for Story County. Several other locations around the country have pursued these youth master plans. It's a huge planning process to really identify what services have the best outcomes and to match the types of services with the needs of the local county or community. It would need to be funded. It involves a lot of facilitation and bringing together of all the nonprofits and educational systems and local government to complete a youth master plan. It's a best practice. It will ensure for years to come that you are investing your money in the programs that are most effective at helping young people succeed and to become contributing members of society. Is there anything you wanted to add to the master plan?
I think you've covered everything.
Okay. And I handed out to you a laminated Bill of Rights. Our kids in our foster care out-of-home placement AMP program, Achieving Maximum Potential. We have over 1,000 kids who are participating in AMP. They came up with a Bill of Rights and Responsibilities for kids in out-of-home placement. This was actually presented to DHS, the governor, endorsed by the First Lady, Chris Branstad. DHS endorsed it, and they are putting up $10,000 to roll it out across Iowa. Our kids are the ones who wrote this. I'm very proud of it and very proud of Story County for funding programs like AMP. Our foster care program right now in Ames and Story County, we are really, really busy. All of our homes are full. As you know, we're part of KidsNet, and we're overseeing a multi-county area of foster homes. Right now, we have over 400 foster adoptive homes that we're overseeing recruitment and retention. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again. Keep up the good work. Okay.
No departmental reports. Liaison assignments and committee meeting updates.
Okay. Pass didn't have any.
I attended a special meeting of the Maxwell City Council last Tuesday evening. They met with Brett Comgees, who's the mayor from Collins, and here, I don't know, several weeks ago we approved the technical assistant grant program, and Maxwell was a recipient of that grant and had Mr. Comgees go through a emergency response plan and a capital improvement plan, and also a there's one other I can't remember, but the special meeting was for him to go through these with the city council members. About a 2-hour process to go through, and a lot of these things Maxwell didn't have prior to this. So strategic plan was the other one that they'd gone through. So it was a very worthwhile meeting. I think that the council from Maxwell was very grateful that the county took the initiative to fund this, because it was something that they weren't going to be able to do on their own. And I know he's working on several other communities also, so he's going to be busy before the end of the fiscal year.
Did they let you speak?
Briefly. What I do best, so. other reports, none. Public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Don't see anybody. Announcements from the supervisors.
We had just received an email this morning from the county attorney updating the Story County fine recovery, and that was an outstanding report. And it basically indicated that Story County had hit the threshold amount of $250,000 in eligible court costs and fine recovery yesterday. And this will mean that we will receive 40% of the eligible court cost, and the county attorney's office would receive about 12% of that, and the state 48%. So altogether, as of November 17, 2012, the fine recovery had totaled $394,952.14. And I just sent an email back to the county attorney, basically just congratulating them, and wanted to especially send out our appreciation to the individuals that are working diligently in the fine recovery program. But you remember a few years ago, this was a program that was brought to our attention, and we see that it certainly is has not only has it brought some revenue back, but more importantly, it's held those who have committed a crime responsible for restitution for the time and effort that went to it. So I just wanted to compliment the county attorney office for that. And then the second item, later within the next few months, or probably before the end of the fiscal year, Barb Steinbeck and I, we attended the National Cybersecurity Conference in Omaha, Nebraska last Thursday and Friday. We came away with some tremendous background information and topics. We plan to work with Alyssa and with our assistant county attorney, Jessica, as we review some of our policies and procedures. While we really believe right now we have a good start on things and have a lot of things in place, but they gave us a lot of food for thought and ways to take a look at. And some of the responsibilities indicate Do you have not only have you identified your policies, but do you also identify who are the people handling very sensitive information and so forth, and have they been duly trained or, you know, informed of, you know, the little pitfalls that you need to avoid? So I think that Iowa Association of Counties was also there. I'll be working with Tammy, and we'll see what we can do. I think it's Peterson. I wanted to say Bill, but I'm not sure if it's right. Professor at Iowa State University was one of the presenters in cybersecurity, and he just did a phenomenal job, and he has agreed to not only work with Story County, but with the Iowa Association of Counties as we try to make sure that other counties are aware of the potential cyber threats that is out there. So I found it to be a wonderful opportunity, and I have a lot of information. For the first time, I sat there with my iPad, and I was typing notes on it, and I walked away feeling really good. Now I've got to learn how I can email that so I can download it. You know, that's my next job, but I do have some notes from the session. But you will hear more about that, just to kind of give you just a little heads up, Paul and Jessica, one of the things that they're talking about is there are a lot of businesses and industries that are having a no Facebook presence allowed in, you know, county facilities and so forth. They talk about the number of people who actually are spending time on Facebook. And he says, now, as a county, we might want to have a few people designated that if they're sending certain bits of information out, you can identify who they are, et cetera. But the social media aspect of it, again, was something that we need to talk about. And again, going to different websites and making sure that only certain websites you have certain county employees that are able to actually access. And so I think we're going to talk about looking at our policies a little bit closer and working with IT to determine what may or may not be the best use of taxpayer dollars and how employees use their time while on the job. So that'll be something to look forward to. And then the last item is this Thursday, and hopefully, Jessica, you'll be able to attend. We are having our meeting here with the Board of Supervisors and the CPCs in a joint meeting as we're talking further about the regionalization. We've got several items now that will need to be adopted as we move forward. And we'll probably get another quick update of where we are as far as legislation and so forth. And that meeting is going to be held here in the board room at 1 p.m. This Thursday on the 25th. So just wanted to bring that to your attention. So good.
That it?
Yep.
Okay. I just wanted to take a minute and extend our appreciation to the public safety professionals in the Boston area. We all know what happened a week ago yesterday at 2:50. In the afternoon at the Boston Marathon, and to sit back and think that within 3 days they had engaged these knuckleheads in a firefight and had killed one and had one on the run, and by Friday had him in custody, and even the people of Boston to have the governor put the city on a shelter in place and basically shut the city down, and you didn't hear a lot of complaints from anybody. So I just want to wish those guys well thanks for a job well done. So I'll take
with
motion for adjournment.
With that, so move. A move adjournment.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
Good. Thank you.